to earn 60% or 600 points if all I receive is 50% of the points for a correct answer. If I answered every single question correctly, I would still only get 500 points.
Do we have your position? Thank you. We'll reserve the decision. We'll now hear Scholz against IRS. I understand Mr. Scholz is here, and the government is appearing by video feed from Albany. Can Albany hear us?
Hear you, Your Honor. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, great. I'm glad the equipment is working. Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Mr. Scholz, whenever you're ready.
Yes, good afternoon. Good afternoon. The underlying question in this case was about my First Amendment. It's about the First Amendment guarantee of my right to petition the government for the redress of grievances and to seek, publish, and associate freely, and to do so without retaliation. I have reason to believe that certain actions of the executive and legislative branches are repugnant to certain clauses of the Constitution. The taxing clauses, the war powers clauses,
Mr. Scholz, simply put, you get a summons from the IRS. As I understand it, you correct me if I'm in error, you need not respond to that. You are under no compulsion, and nothing need be done unless and until the government initiates a proceeding to force your compliance, so that in the first instance, this summons, which has no teeth, does not provide jurisdiction for the court. And it is only until after a proceeding is brought that you are at some risk, and at that point, it is all entertained. Where have I misspoken in your view?
Reisman is dispositive. Reisman versus Kaplan, the Supreme Court, said, we have a choice. If a person like me receives an administrative summons, that person can either go to district court in response to the summons, or that person can go to the IRS agent and quarrel with the agent or provide whatever it is the agent is looking for. Or I can do nothing, and the IRS can come back to the district, can initiate an action in district court under 7604 to enforce the summons that I ignored. But Rasmus dispositive. I have not ignored the summons. I, like many other people, have gone into district court and raised a substantial constitutional question. The test in U.S. v. Powell is there has to be a legitimate purpose behind the summons. As the record shows, the summons I received says nothing, except
the summons simply put isn't worth the paper it's written on, and as a result, there is no controversy for the court to entertain.
You're right.
Not until a proceeding is brought.
You're right, I would disagree. The summons is an enforcement action. The summons says, you come in here with your books, your personal records. Doesn't say why, does not indicate that there's investigation underway. It states no legitimate purpose. This court in U.S. v. White says, in the case of a summons, should I get the language exactly right? The Internal Revenue Service is required to declare a good faith pursuit of the congressionally authorized purposes of Section 7602, the section that authorizes the IRS to issue administrative summonses. So I exercised one of my options to challenge this in district court. raising a very substantial constitutional question. The reason, the only reason the record shows that the IRS has issued this administrative summons is to chill my right under the right to petition and to chill the enthusiasm of those people who are participating with me in this petition process. Understandably, Your Honor, the courts have not clearly defined the contours of the last 10 words of the First Amendment. What do they really mean? To me, they mean the only non-violent option we have to hold the government accountable, other than the ballot. But the ballot is only for the majority. It takes way more than half the number of people voting to carry the issue. But we are, our rights are individual rights. And I'm exercising, I have reason to believe, good reason to believe, with the assistance of constitutional scholars, that the Iraq Resolution violates the War Powers Clauses, that the USA Patriot Act violates the Privacy and Due Process Clauses, and that the direct unapportioned tax on labor violates the taxing clauses of the Constitution, and finally, that the Federal Reserve System violates the money and debt limit provisions of the Constitution. I have assistance of constitutional scholars.
Fortunately, we don't have to decide those issues.
No, and I agree, Your Honor, but what I say is, with that evidence, I have 25 years of scrutinizing government. I've been in this court in Schultz v. Lane. I have 25 years. My life is dedicated to scrutinizing governmental behavior and comparing that behavior with the requirements of the Constitution. And whenever I've seen an impropriety confronting it, so here we have four well-prepared, professional, intelligent, rational petitions for redress of grievances that I'm pursuing nationally in a very high-profile way.
We understand.
And
I think your light is on now.
I'm sorry. Could I reserve?
I don't think we'll reserve a minute, but we'll give you one anyway.
Thank you.
Mr. Storch?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Robert Storch from the U.S. Attorney's Office on behalf of the government. I won't belabor this, Your Honor. As the Court has said, there's a very clear statutory scheme that provides jurisdiction to the district courts. That jurisdiction exists where the government seeks to enforce the IRS subpoena. The government did not do that here.
Does the face of the subpoena tell recipients that? I ask that because I would think most recipients of an IRS subpoena would not be likely to ignore it unless they knew they could do that. And it seems unnecessarily burdensome to the district courts, if you're right, to have people come in and make motions to quash only to be told that there's no jurisdiction. If it's your position that they can either voluntarily comply or take no action until you start enforcement proceedings, why don't you put that on your subpoena?
Well, Your Honor, that's an interesting point, but I suppose there's a third option that occurs to me, is that the individual receiving the subpoena can respond and interpose any objections they have. So I don't know that it's simply a choice between not responding at all or filing an unnecessary lawsuit. If they have good faith objections, as this gentleman claims that he has, and I don't know the merits of them, but if he has them, he certainly could appear and interpose them in administrative proceeding for the IRS. Alternatively, the government could seek to enforce. And if the government sought to enforce them, then you would be entitled to interpose those proceedings. It's just a procedural posture here by raising the question on his own prior to enforcement. There just isn't jurisdiction in the district court, with the exception of the third-party subpoenas. There's an exception created in the statute for those under 7609. But other than that, he has several choices, but this just isn't one of them. The district court
you are ignoring the reality. It would seem to me the average taxpayer, upon receipt of a summons from the Internal Revenue Service, would view that as he or she would any other summons. It requires action. And as a result of that, unless the summons on its face indicates there are other options,
options, including ignoring it, most average taxpayers will respond with something. Therefore, they are under some de facto compunction and should be given a right to move to quash at that stage. Indeed, we so held many years ago in Colton. Did we not?
Your Honor, I think that that is an issue that could be taken to Congress, perhaps, and legislation, if appropriate, Congress could consider amending it. But the way the legislation is written now, and I believe the Reisman case very clearly holds that there's not equitable jurisdiction where there is an adequate remedy at law, and here there was an adequate remedy at law. The IRS, had they sought to enforce it, Mr. Schultz would have been free to interpose all of these objections. Just as I believe, and I'm not an expert on IRS administrative law, but I believe he would have been entitled to interpose those before a hearing officer in response to the subpoena. So I'm not sure I agree with the court, based on my admittedly somewhat limited understanding, that he would simply have to either respond by turning over the documents or go to court. I think he could have interposed an objection to the IRS. They could have considered it, and then he could have taken further judicial review from that. And the Reisman court talks about the availability of judicial review from that. So Your Honor, the statutory scheme which we rely on, we submit it, is quite clear. And all of the cases, to my knowledge, have held, we cited the ones in our memorandum, have held that a personal individual such as this petitioner, who is not appearing in the representative capacity, when you personally receive an IRS subpoena, you have several options, but one of them is not to go and seek to quash in the district court prior to the IRS bringing enforcement action. As the court says, that subpoena is not on its own enforceable. It requires some action by the government to enforce it. And I can see the court's point about the notice issue, but I believe that would be responded to in most cases by the taxpayer going in response to the IRS subpoena and saying, I'm not going to give you this. Presumably in Mr. Schultz's case, he would assert all of these First Amendment arguments that he wants to assert in this case. And then the question of the propriety of the subpoena would be properly presented, and that could be reviewed. But the district court just doesn't have jurisdiction under the statutory scheme, and therefore we believe it was correct under the statute and the cases in dismissing.
So, Mr. Stokes, is it your position that a taxpayer who receives a subpoena and does not comply suffers absolutely nothing until an enforcement action is brought?
That's my understanding, Your Honor. If the IRS subpoenas somebody...
So the enforcement action is not... It doesn't seek to hold somebody in contempt. It seeks the court order that, if then violated, would prompt a contempt.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. I believe 7604... B gives the government the ability to seek enforcement of the subpoena by way of contempt in the district court, and 7604A is what gives the district court jurisdiction over that. And the problem here is that the district court just doesn't have jurisdiction until the government seeks to enforce the subpoena. At least that is my understanding.
Well, I want to be sure I understand. You enforce it by seeking to hold the person in contempt? Or you seek an enforcement order, and then if that's violated, you seek to hold them in contempt?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that the IRS would go to the district court and seek to compel compliance with the subpoena, and that if the taxpayer does not comply, then they could be held in contempt. Let me be very clear. That's my understanding, Your Honor. Based on my reading and such, I don't claim to be an expert in this. What I do understand, I believe, is that the statute very clearly limits jurisdiction in the district court to enforcement actions, and everything I could find anyway agreed with the district court that it does not have jurisdiction unless and until the government seeks an enforcement action. The people just can't go in and initiate an equitable was essentially an action in equity, as I believe Mr. Schultz indicated it was, seeking to quash a subpoena where there's an adequate remedy at law.
But as I understand it, the IRS, when it does go into court in an enforcement proceeding, does not ask for a finding of contempt right away.
I believe that's right.
You say you believe it's right.
I just want to be honest with the court. I don't claim to be an expert in those proceedings. I know, at least it's my understanding, the IRS has to go to court first for there to be jurisdiction. I believe that's correct based on my reading of the statute.
But what is it that they are seeking when they go to court in the first instance? That's the question.
Well, Your Honor, I believe they're seeking to compel compliance with the subpoena.
In other words, an order saying, answer it. Or comply with the subpoena. Why I think this is significant, at least as I ask you the question, Mr. Storch, is that I want to know if the first proceeding in front of the district court could result in someone being found in contempt. Because that's why someone comes in and moves to quash, so that there's not an issue about them being in contempt. If what you're telling us is that the first thing that the district court does on an enforcement order or an enforcement proceeding is issue an order saying comply, then the person is given a discrete amount of time to do that. And only if the person violates the court order are they found in contempt. That's a different matter.
Your Honor, I honestly do not know the answer in terms of the proceedings that take place initially in the district court, but I will say, as I listen to the court's question, I'm not sure that it matters. And the reason I say that is this. It seems to me that whatever you call the proceeding, when the IRS goes in and moves to compel compliance with the subpoena, at that point, the taxpayer has an opportunity to interpose any defenses they want to interpose.
There's a big difference. If someone loses the proceeding in front of the district court, and the district court's order says you're in contempt of the IRS, basically, that is a blot against someone that they might not wish to ever have had in issue.
Sure, but that wouldn't be done, it's my understanding, unless and until the district court gave the taxpayer an opportunity to respond, to interpose any defenses, and the court would have to make the sort of findings that Mr. Schultz is seeking here, that it was a proper subpoena and it was for a proper purpose and all the rest of that. I have no reason to question any of that. I guess what I'm saying, Judge, and I want to be completely honest with the court, I viewed the question here as a very simple one of there's no jurisdiction unless and until the IRS moves to enforce, and that's the statute and that's the case law. But I do think, as the court has framed the question, whether it's called a motion to compel or a motion for contempt, and I don't know the answer, in either event, before there is such a finding, the taxpayer would have an opportunity to interpose their defenses, and the district court would have to find that the subpoena is appropriate. So I don't see, honestly, Your Honor, how the taxpayer would be disadvantaged, because that contempt finding couldn't occur unless and until the district court found that the subpoena was proper and that the defenses were not valid. So
well, I can't be a judicial ruler. Mr. Storch, I think we're going to give you an opportunity to confirm all of this to us.
All right.
Let's ask that you submit a 10-page letter brief no later than the close of business 1 week from today, which letter brief discusses the issue that we're now discussing. In particular, we'd like you to tell us whether, in the view of the IRS or in any case law, the taxpayer is under some compunction at the initial moment of receiving the summons or subpoena, which might then create jurisdiction for a motion to quash. And if not, what is the policy of the IRS, either in regulation, case law, or otherwise, as to what it is the IRS sees as occurring in enforcement proceeding. And that is to say whether that proceeding is intended and seeks only an enforcement order, which, if not complied with, may thereafter lead to contempt, or whether that proceeding might in some way initially place the taxpayer in jeopardy of contempt or some other unforeseen circumstance.
Very well, Your Honor. I will say that if it assists the court, in response to the first question, I think I got it.
I'm not finished.
I'm sorry.
I'd like you to address a second question. I'd like you to tell us what your understanding, what the government's understanding is of the law as presented by the Second Circuit, not by district courts within the circuit, but by this court, starting with Judge Friendly's opinion in Colton, and as you see the cases developing thereafter. So we'll expect your brief by the close of business on Monday next, and Mr. Schultz will give you an opportunity to reply to that by the end of that week.
Your Honor, I, if it's convenient for the court, I apologize even for asking for this, but I have a number of other criminal briefs due over the next couple of weeks, and this is something I'm going to have to rely on the IRS for. This was, as the court is aware, initially on submit, and I honestly, and if I didn't answer all the court's questions, I apologize, and part of it's because I was unaware until this morning we were going to even be discussing this case.
You just indicated you're not going to write the brief. The IRS will.
Well, I'm just concerned with the holidays, whether they're going to be available, Your Honor, and the like.
Well,
I'm
not sure there are no holidays intervening between now and the 20th of December, are there?
Your Honor, I'll respond to
you. Even Hanukkah is about to close.
It is, Your Honor. Two nights left.
All right. Well, how much time do you need?
Whatever's committed from the court, Your Honor, I don't want to, I hadn't thought of anything. It just concerns me with the schedule and the holidays and trying to get the IRS to give me a response.
Suppose we gave you until the 23rd of December.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. Thank you.
And Mr. Schultz will expect yours by the 30th of December.
Thank you.
Now, you wanted to add something, I believe, substantively, while I kept interrupting you.
Oh, no, Your Honor, I was just going to respond to the first point, which, to the extent it's dispositive, although I'll be happy to talk to the IRS and get the court whatever it wants. But I believe in response to the first question the court asked, whether the mere submission of the subpoena or the serving of the subpoena subjects the taxpayer to, at that point, any penalties for not complying. I believe the answer is no. And the court, I believe, correctly stated that right at the outset of the argument. And the district court, or at least the magistrate, subsequently affirmed in denying Mr. Schultz relief, affirmed that. The mere giving of a subpoena to a taxpayer, I do not believe that puts any penalties on them or subjects them to any penalties. So that doesn't answer the court's later questions, and we will get the answers for the court.
Thank you both. Oh, did you want to make Mr. Schultz?
Yes, sir, if I might. I agree, Your Honor. The IRS cannot enforce the summons initially issued under 7602 until it moves under 7604. However, I am not precluded. There's no law that precludes me from defending myself against that initial administrative summons. And I would argue that under 7604, it's plain. It starts out, I believe, from memory, I'll paraphrase, that the IRS may proceed to hold me in contempt, and this is what it says. This is possible under 7604. If I didn't respond to the 7602 summons, 7604 says the IRS can go to a district judge without me present, without me knowing about it, and you say to the district judge, I want an attachment for, because he failed to comply with that summons. I want him arrested. I can be arrested, put in jail, and held there pending a trial. That's what 7604 says. And I'm sure that he'll address that when he responds. I would ask
I tell you will in your letter as well.
Yes. And I would ask the court to read Reisman. To me, Reisman is dispositive. The U.S. Supreme Court makes it very clear in Reisman that when issued a summons, as under 7602, we have the option. We can go to district court. It cites a number of cases where people have done that. Or the court did something in that case that it had, said it hadn't done before, which was address a constitutionality.
We understand. Okay. Now, you both understand that your letter briefs are to be restricted to 10 pages.
Yes, I understand that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll reserve decision, and we are adjourned.